Welcome back to the podcast. I'm really excited for today's episode. I have TK Coleman, who is the educational director at the Foundation for Economic Education. Thanks for coming on, man.
It is awesome to be with you, Jeff. Thanks for having me on.
I wanted to have you on because you have such tremendous insight about investments and entrepreneurship and education. So let's first start with education. Pretend you're a freshman in English class, or go back to those days. What was your mentality? What were your prospects for kind of life in the future? And then how did that change by the time you were a senior?
When I was a freshman in high school, I was focused on pretty much two things: sitting in the back of every classroom and spending all my time writing songs in my quest to be a professional songwriter and singer. And the second thing, I think I was just focused on fitting in, making friends, and not standing out in a way that makes me look weird. I had not yet learned how to embrace my weirdness as the secret to all things in life. And so I think, like many people at that age, I had some dreams, you know, that weren't fully fleshed out and understood, but I also had a lot of insecurities, a lot of self-consciousness, a lot of emphasis on my basic human need for validation. And when you're a freshman, you're still kind of getting comfortable in your own skin. That's a big transition, right? You're going from eighth grade to freshman year, which often means a new school, a new set of teachers, a new environment, new social setting, and figuring out who you are in relation to all these other people, what your role is, how you're going to navigate it all. I think I was focused on a lot of those types of things. At least that's the way I remember it. I could be romanticizing it.
It often happens. That's such a difficult thing as a teacher, because you want to tell kids to have a backup plan. So they have this dream, being a songwriter or being whatever, and say, hey, follow the dream, but have a backup plan. And then you talk to successful entrepreneurs, and a lot of times they say, no backup plan. You know, you got to go full tilt, because if you do have a backup plan, then plan B is going to start to become more and more attractive. So as you got older, maybe by senior year, how did things change or adjust, or did you end up being a songwriter at some point?
I did not end up being a songwriter, but all of the skills and experiences that I acquired by pursuing that have been relevant to me in every other area of life, because the process of writing songs also means organizing your thoughts. It means processing your feelings. It means learning how to take your convictions and translate them into a language that resonates with other people. It also involves taking what's inside of you and presenting it in a way that's catchy, that's rhythmic, that people will remember and retain. And all of these things have been useful for me as an educator. So if I can offer a little commentary on this idea of have a backup plan versus don't have a backup plan, I think there's a good middle ground. And that is, be a multidimensional thinker about everything that you love and desire in life. The reason why people say you need a backup plan is because everyone understands that if you have some kind of dream, you know, like being a NASCAR driver, being a basketball player, being a hockey player, being a singer, being an actor, usually something that's more risky, being a millionaire. We know that the odds are such that you might fail. And if you fail, you don't want to base your happiness in life on only being able to achieve that thing. But I think the solution here is to teach people to think multidimensionally about their interests. And what I mean by that is, you can always do what you love if you have a sense of imagination. So let's say, for instance, that you love basketball and that's all you think about all the time. But maybe you have something going on in your life where maybe you just don't have the physique, maybe you just don't have the skill or what have you. Well, if you take that interest in basketball and you combine it with one other thing that you love or that you can be good at, you can still build a career that is oriented around basketball and create a lot of wealth and have a lot of fun while doing so. So for instance, there's more to basketball than just being one of the people on the court that dribbles and shoots. There are also people who get paid a lot of money to do nothing more than get on television before the game and after the game and give their opinion about the same thing you just watched. Well, why do they get paid to do that and you don't? Well, because these people have found a way to talk about what they love in a manner that makes people laugh, in a manner that provokes people and causes them to feel strong emotion, in a manner that is really intelligent or really creative or really philosophical, right? In a way that makes sense out of what we see, in such a way that causes us to want to listen to them do it more and more. I was recently looking at, I think it was Stephen A. Smith signed some multi-million dollar contract to do nothing more than get on the TV and talk about the games in an interesting way. Did you see the way he just dunked the basketball? That is absolutely unbelievable, mm-hmm. utterly ridiculous, completely nonsensical, right? And it's like, this guy gets to go to basketball games for free. He gets to have front row seats. He gets to meet with the celebrities. He, you know what I mean? He does all the things that you would love and has a very wealthy career. Or let's say, for instance, that you want to be a musician. Well, there's more to music than just being the person that's on stage singing. In order to get an album or a concert, you need a lot of other talent. You need stage managers. You need songwriters. You need sound engineers. You need vocal coaches. Right? You need a lot of people who work around that industry. And so if you do the things that you love, but you combine it with other things that you love, you'll be able to bring those things together in a unique way that makes you interesting and irreplaceable, and you still get to work around the industry that you love. So never think about your interest in this one-dimensional way. You want to play football, you want to be an actor, whatever it may be. There are accountants, lawyers, coaches, advisors, therapists, physical therapists. There are people in every industry that work closely with the people in that industry. And there are lots of ways to work in or around something that you love that goes beyond merely being a performer. And the reason this is so valuable isn't just because it gives you more ways to succeed. It also protects you against the thing that everybody is afraid of, and that is wasting their time. What if I spend hours and hours trying to be the world's greatest piano player, but then one day I find out that that's not what I'm supposed to do with my life? No worries. When you think about this stuff creatively, you realize that all skill is transferable. The hours and hours and hours that you put into becoming a great piano player will teach you things that are applicable to other things that have nothing to do with music. You have to learn discipline. You have to learn structure. You have to learn how to learn, right? You have to do things that are painful and uncomfortable. You have to develop a sense of musicality. You have to develop a sense of how things that seem to be disconnected come together in a harmonious way. And that skill can be applied to other things. And so, young people, if you're listening and you've got something that you love, don't be afraid to dedicate yourself to what you love now, out of a fear that you might want to do something different in 5-10 years. Don't try to predict what your future self is going to desire or want. You can't do it. That information is inaccessible to you. Focus on what's in front of you and be the kind of person who immerses yourself so deeply into what's in front of you that whenever you're done with that, you will actually have something of substance that you can carry forward with you into the next thing. Man, I just talked for a long time. I'm going to take a breath here.
No, that was great. That was it's impressive how you can just get on that. And it's so much good stuff. I'm taking notes, and it's so fluid and so concise and so relevant. There were a couple things that in there were funny. A brief kind of side point about like Stephen A. I wonder if like some of the points he makes about the Cowboys aren't even, it's not even reasonable. It's not even rational, but it's part of the entertainment part of it. And he understands that so well. And I wonder if, you know, you get to that level, you've established that and you know how to communicate, you know what works, and you're marketing yourself. It's such an important thing to have. I have two former journalists.
By the way, really quickly on that, because all of this stuff matters in terms of thinking more creatively about life. We tend to think that value only comes from giving people accurate information, but value also comes from giving people a reason to laugh or making people feel alive. One of the reasons that people watch sports is because it makes them feel alive. Some of the most optimistic people I know, some of the most positive people I know, voluntarily every Sunday take their happiness and they put it in the hands of a referee and they say, I'm going to let you determine my mood for the day. And these people aren't victims. They know what they're doing, but they just enjoy the experience of feeling alive. They enjoy the risk, right? Why do we pay comedians so much money? We pay comedians money because we all know what it's like to take ourselves too seriously and to feel stressed out by life. Comedians have a way of making us look at things in a manner that causes us to laugh. They have a way of taking all the stressful things and giving us a perspective on it that makes us say, ha ha, you know what? I am kind of silly for getting angry about that all the time. And so when people, you know, talk about the game and they say things that are provocative, they know they're not giving factual information, but that's not what you want anyway, because you turn off the TV. If the guy got on television and said, today, the Los Angeles Lakers beat the Chicago Bulls by 4 points.
That's your old school journalism.
Yeah, you don't want that. Like that guy's offering you nothing that you can't provide yourself. You want someone that's going to make you feel something. You want someone to get on TV and say something like, the Cowboys are the worst team that's ever put on a uniform. The worst team I've ever seen in my life. They're ridiculous.
Why?
You want somebody that's going to make you say, well, wait a minute, the Cowboys aren't that. And now they have you engaged. And that's what you love. That's what makes it fun.
Yeah. On the entertainment piece a little bit, I wonder, and I warn my kids a little bit, or my students, not kids. I don't have any kids. I warn the students a little bit about outsourcing too much of their happiness to entertainment or too much of their time, because that's a very important productive level. Like when you're younger and you're establishing these sort of things and you're establishing those skills like you were talking about, things are a lot different now than they were when we were growing up. So are you concerned about the level of connectivity to entertainment, and when does that become distraction, and when does that kind of erode the skills that you should be building socially?
Well, there are a couple of things here. One, I try very hard to not be a chronological snob. And that's a term I borrow from C.S. Lewis, who refers to chronological snobbery as the attitude of someone who attributes value to things based on its newness or its oldness, right? Oh, because it's new, it's bad. Or because it's new, it's good. Because it's old, it's good. Because it's old, it's bad. You know, I don't want to base anything on whether or not it's new or old. And so in my efforts to not be a chronological snob, I try to think critically about things like the presence of modern day distractions and entertainments. When I was growing up, yeah, we didn't have YouTube. We didn't have Amazon One Click. We didn't have TikTok and Snapchat. We didn't have the ability to scroll. But you know what? It's not the case that everyone was just sitting around writing books, learning languages, building businesses, and behaving productively. We found different ways to waste our time. In every generation, human beings have had to face the battle between a higher self that knows that it was created to evolve and to be great, and a kind of lower self that just wants to do what's comfortable and just wants to do what's easy and is fishing around for a distraction. And so every generation has different bells and whistles, different trinkets, different superficial things with which to distract themselves. And so this generation just has a different set of toys, a different set of tools, but I don't see them being particularly more distracted than we were when we were kids. Their distractions are just a little less romanticized than the ones we had, because after all, we tend to romanticize our past. But, you know, I was pretty much like these kids. Maybe they scroll all day and they're on TikTok. Well, I was, you know, playing with my WWE action figures all day, or maybe like watching sitcoms all day or something along those lines. I don't think I was more productive. So I try not to overdramatize it. Secondly, I try to find the good in what they do. So for instance, it's easy for me to turn my nose up at the fact that every person on TikTok is trying to be a professional dancer, right? Like that's the thing. That's what everybody does. And I think it's just because I'm older and I have a bias. My instinct is to get irritated whenever I see something like that, right? But when I think back to when I was a kid, me and all the kids were either trying to imitate the karate moves that we saw in the movies, or we were trying to imitate the basketball moves of the people that we saw on TV. And most of us never turned out to be professional martial artists. Most of us never turned out to be professional athletes. But for starters, we were just kids, you know? But we also learned things by trying to do that, that became very useful and meaningful. So if kids are spending hours trying to master some TikTok dance, you know what? That's a great context for them to learn discipline. In fact, it's a better context for them to learn discipline than when you and I make them do things that we think are important. Right. Because there's a difference between compliance and discipline, right? Compliance is when you conform your behavior to the will of an authority figure and you do what I say because I have the power to make you do it or make your life difficult if you don't. So when your mom says, take out the garbage and you do it, well, that's compliance. But compliance isn't discipline. Discipline is when you have internalized a commitment to something that you care about. And you care about it so much that you're willing to work hard at mastering it. So I see a lot of these tools, a lot of the things that kids are trying to do on social media through a positive lens. And I see it as a great context for them to learn discipline. It's just that as the adults and mentors in their lives, we've got to figure out a way to learn why they love these things so much so that we can incorporate it into the educational process. Instead of trying to get them off TikTok, let's say you already like it, you're already interested in it. How can we use this to further your personal development so that you're actually making constructive use of the tools rather than the tools using you? Does that make sense?
Oh yeah, for 100%. I've had journalists that write about how they want to be video game engineers. And I said, well, that's great. You know, like you don't become a video game engineer by playing it. You understand the story and you're absorbing these different stories, these different characters, what works, what doesn't. So you're stockpiling this experience into something that's going to be usable and marketable. So if you do have the opportunity to write a story for the video game, you know, then there's something that's come out of that. It's great living in, go ahead.
I'll give a yes and to that, right? So you don't become a video game engineer by merely playing it. You have to go beyond playing the game and you have to think about it conceptually and creatively. But I think it actually starts with playing the game.
Oh, yeah.
Because there are two components with creating wealth. On one end, you have to figure out a way to solve problems for people or create value for them. But the other component is you've got to figure out a way to do that in a way where you're uniquely advantaged. And the best advantage is passion, interest, and direct experience. So if you love playing video games, then that means you're more likely to create video games with a quality of empathy that non-gamers don't have. The guy that's just creating video games to make money and get rich is going to be less quality to his work than the person who is creating video games but also loves to play them. And so I think it's important to encourage people to play and to explore their passions and not force themselves to be practical all the time, but then to challenge them to go beyond that and say, okay, now that you've discovered your interest, which is the big problem for most people, let's figure out a way we can use that interest to make someone else's life better or easier or more entertained. Mm-hmm.
So social media has connected us in a way that humans have never been connected, which we've talked about, you know, good and bad. What's the difference between potentially finding mentors versus just reposting social media influencers? So if you're the average of the five people you spend the most time with, has social media and your online presence, the people you connect with there, has that replaced like one of those people? Are you the four people you hang out with the most and then your online presence? Or what do you think about any of those things?
I love the idea that your life is the byproduct of the people that you spend the most time around. What social media has done is it's given us more control over how we curate and create our own social environment. Because prior to the advent of social media, you lived where you lived. And if there were no people on your block or in your house or at your church or the places you could walk to or feasibly access, well, too bad for you. You don't really get to interact with any successful business people. You don't get to interact with anyone that's more creative than you or anyone that's lived in the places you might want to explore. And social media gives us access to that. It gives us the opportunity to perhaps learn from people that we might never get a chance to talk to engage people that we might not otherwise have met. So just last week, I was at the Gramercy Theater in New York, and I shared the stage with Seth Godin. Seth Godin is the author of an excellent book called Lynchpin. This book right here. And he's the creator of Alt-MBA. I started following Seth years ago on Twitter and on his blog. and I would read his short blog post, and he really inspired me. I heard him on a podcast talking about blogging every day, and he inspired me to start writing a blog every day. And then when I saw his Alt MBA program, I decided to enroll as a student. And then when I graduated, I became a coach. And over time, you know, my career and so on began to progress. And then here I find myself last week, literally on tour with The Minimalists, Seth Godin sitting next to me, one of my mentors that I had never met except through the internet. He's sitting next to me, and the two of us are answering people's questions together, giving advice to people in the audience together. And I'm thinking to myself the whole time, how unreal is this? That would never be possible without the internet, because Seth Godin isn't from where I'm from. He didn't live in my neighborhood. I would have never been able to access him if it weren't for the possibilities created around the internet. So I think as teachers, we have an awesome opportunity to show our students how to use social media as a way to connect with their heroes and learn from them in ways that could radically change their lives for good.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, this whole conversation here that we're having here, I can't remember if it was a tweet that I saw that someone else shared of yours, or if it was an Instagram post, or if it was one of those, because you follow this person or recommend it, I don't know how it is that I started to follow you. And then now here we are having a podcast. So it's just a great example again of positive influence, and you expose yourself to that. And that's why I like to listen to podcasts in the morning. So by the time I'm at school, the brain's working, I've got positivity going, I've already eaten, I've worked out, I've had some food. So I'm ready to go for first hour. I'm not still waking up. And it's just such a huge difference. And I didn't have that when I first started teaching. It was just kind of wake up, go to school. But now it's prepare, and then you can make that impact. You've talked about power coming from purpose. So when people are finding their jobs, either kids outside of after they graduated high school, or they've graduated college, or even adults looking to kind of pivot in the workforce. Can you talk a little bit more about the power coming from purpose?
Power comes from purpose. So I think going back to the distinction I made earlier between discipline and compliance, I think the greatest motivation comes from doing something for you. And when I say doing something for you, I don't mean doing something that is purely selfish, or doing something at the expense of others, or refusing to take the well-being of other people into account. That's not what I mean. When I say doing something for you, I mean being driven by your own preferences and by your own principles, rather than being driven by the fear of punishment. And if we're real about it, a lot of what happens in schools across the country is young people are doing a whole lot of work, but they're not doing it with a sense of this benefits me, or this is what I want to do, or this is something that I care about, or I see how this is connected to my dreams and my desires and my preferences. A lot of what happens is we become really good when we're young at following instructions, doing what we're told, and just going up to what's mandatory and stopping because we don't want to get in trouble. And what I try to teach my students is that greatness is always expressed in the willingness to go beyond what is mandatory. And how do you tap into that? You don't tap into that just by, you know, trying to make yourself feel guilty about being great. You tap into it by thinking very deeply about the things that you care about and what your concept of the good life is, and then relating all the things that you do to that. So here's an example I'll give. We'll do this live thought experiment with you and I. Can you think back to a time in your life where one of your parents did something like made you take out the garbage?
Oh, yeah.
All right. And when you did it, did you also say, you know what, since I'm taking out our garbage, I'm going to go to all of the other apartments in this complex or all the other houses in this neighborhood, and I'm going to take out their garbage too? Did you ever do that?
No.
No problem. I don't think that's a bad thing. In fact, I think it's a very rational thing, but I'm curious, why not?
The individual perspective. Well, two things. There was our trash. I didn't really live on a block. I lived on a plot of land on the ocean, Alaska. So that was kind of a cloak thing. But as far as like the it just a hyper focus. This is what I have to do for my parents, rather than I'm doing it out of the goodness of, because it's the right thing to do. My parents, my brother was born on an odd day. I was born on an even day. And so on even days, I did the chore. So if the garbage had to be taken out, that was me. Yeah. Wash the dishes, yeah, that was me. But yeah, I never even thought to apply that to, hey, it's an even day. So, hey, you know, Mr. Butler, I'll make some copies for you. Or, hey, you know, I'll help some people out. Yeah, it never went beyond just the chore that was delegated to me because it was an even day.
Now, by the way, my experience is the same. Most people's experience is the same. And I think the reason why is very rational. Here's the deal. When our parents made us take out the garbage, we were doing something that we didn't prefer to do, right? Usually when they made us take out the garbage, we were trying to be busy doing something else instead. And if your parents had given you the option and said, hey, Jeff, would you like to take out the garbage or just keep doing what you're doing? You probably would have said, oh, if I have the option, I'll just keep doing what I'm doing 100% of the time, right? So what happens when someone makes you do something that you don't want to do? Well, you reason in the following way. You say, how much of that do I have to do in order to avoid getting in trouble? And then once you find that out, you do that much and you stop. You don't go beyond what you have to do in order to avoid trouble. Why? Because if you go beyond it, that means you are both doing something that you don't have to do and that you don't want to do. And I can't think of a bigger waste of time than for a person to do something that they neither want to do nor have to do. No one does that, right? You either do something that you want to do or you do something that you have to do, or some marriage between the two, but you never do what you don't have to do and what you don't want to do at the same time. So you find out how much you have to do to avoid getting in trouble and you stop. That's how human beings naturally behave when they are driven by external demands. Okay. Now let's switch it up though. Have you ever been on the phone with a friend, maybe a girl that you liked, or watching TV or playing a video game or something like that? And your parents said, hey, Jeff, it's time for dinner, or it's time to come inside. And you tried to negotiate with them and go, just give me 5 more minutes. You ever experienced something like that?
I learned early on not to test that because dinner was at 6 and mom had it ready at 6. And if I was not eating, so I'm not sure exactly when I tried to test that, but it was, I definitely remember the results of why you don't test that going forward.
So the fact that you learned very on to not test that seems to imply that once upon a time, you may not be able to remember when you experienced the desire to negotiate them, but you learned that since that's so ineffective, you probably shouldn't push it. Right. Is that about right?
Exactly.
Yeah. That is also natural for what we do. Whenever we're doing something that we truly love and truly want to do, we tend to negotiate for the opportunity to do more of it, even when other people who have the power to make our lives difficult are trying to stop us from doing it. So how we behave when we're doing things out of obligation is very different than how we behave when we do things out of love. And there's nothing wrong with doing things out of obligation. I mean, there are some things in life that we simply have to do, whether we like them or not. That's a part of life. I get it. But the way we behave is very different. And so the possibilities that are born out of love are different from the possibilities that are born out of duty. And anyone who talks about success, they're going to tell you things like, well, you got to work hard. You got to be willing to push yourself. You got to be willing to, you know, be the first one to the gym and the last one to leave, all this kind of stuff. And people try to force themselves to be that. And I say, it's actually much simpler. Find out what drives you for you. And make that the foundation upon which you build your pursuit of success. Because when you find out what drives you for you, what makes you come alive, the superpower is going to be that you will be thinking about that thing even when other people are looking at the clock, ready to go to work. You will be working on it and thinking about it even when you're not at work, and you won't be stressed out about it because for you, it's going to be the same as playing. That's the ultimate advantage. The person that's thinking to themselves, oh, I just love accounting. I love helping people, you know, prepare their taxes. I love helping make sense out of the numbers for people. Oh man, it's already 5 o'clock and I got to get home for dinner. Oh, I can't wait to get back here in the morning. that person's always going to be better at what they do than the person that's looking at the clock at 2:30, like, oh, I've got a few more hours. I hate my job, but the money's good. Mm-hmm. The money's good. That person's always going to go further. And so your superpower is the ability to bring enthusiasm and passion to your work, because that's when you're going to think creatively about ways to add more value to people's lives, about ways to make your work easier and more fun, about ways to make a greater difference to others, all those sorts of things. And so being internally driven is the ultimate superpower. It's more important than any skill, because you will go out and acquire the advantages when you're doing it for you.
There's going to be an inevitable grind at some point in that, because, you know, as soon as you make up, this is what I want to do with my life, it's not just, you know, boom, there it is. You know, and people in Hollywood talk about an overnight success takes 10 years. So how do you keep that mindset throughout? And the potential, you know, there's too many people out there with a podcast. There's too many, the outdoor industry is saturated with people. The personal growth industry is totally saturated. You know, there's no way that I'm going to stand out, or why haven't they found me yet? So how do you stay motivated throughout? This is what you wanted to do with your life, but it's not happening yet. Where do you, how do you stack smaller wins?
Yeah. That's a good one. So first I would say that when I talk about doing what you love or following your passion, I don't mean to imply that when you do this, you're always going to have fun and everything's always going to feel good and be easy. In fact, it's usually the opposite. Whatever you love, you must also fight for. And there's no better example of this than parents. Talk to your parents, talk to any parent, and parents will tell you, I love my children, but my children aren't always easy for me, right? No parent enjoys getting up at 2 a.m. or 3 a.m, sacrificing sleep to attend to a crying newborn. No one is thinking, yay, this is so fun, right? But it's the love that they have for the child that makes the pain worth enduring, right? And so when I say find what you love, I'm not offering you an escape from pain, because pain is inevitable. It's part of the human experience. We will all have our hearts broken. We will all suffer inconvenience. We will all think that some things will work out in a certain way and they'll go a different way. We'll all experience disappointment. But you want to find things that you care about so much that the pain is worth enduring, that the pain is worth putting up with, right? So that's the first thing. The second thing I would say is, it's very easy for us to convince ourselves that, you know, well, there are already enough teachers, there are already enough engineers, there are already enough, you know, this or that. But there are some people in this world that are only going to listen because you are the one that's talking. There are some people in this world that are only going to buy it because you are the one that's selling it. And so you might think to yourself, You know what, Jeff, I'm not going to get on this podcast because, you know, I learned a lot of things from Seth. Why don't you just reach out to Seth Godin and have him on? But you know what? I've been around long enough to know that even though I love Seth Godin, when I try to get my friends to read him, they won't do it. They won't do it, but they'll come to me all day long asking me for advice. And I can say, you know what? Do this. They'll be like, oh, thank you. That's so great. But they won't read it. They won't listen to him. Right? My heroes are not their heroes. The people that I can learn from are not the people that they can learn from. And so there are people in this world that are only going to be influenced by the life that you live. So never underestimate your value. I mean, think about it in terms of music and how, you know, you can have a song that gets remade and still do good. And no one says, hey, what's the point of remaking that song? It was already done. Just listen to the original. Because we don't just care about the song. We also care about the person who sings it. And if a person sings it with a different voice at a different time, with a different style, that's interesting. And so there's always room for you to get out there and contribute what makes you unique to any field, even if there are a bunch of people that are already in it. The last thing I'll say about this is how oversaturated a field is only matters if you're the kind of person who just follows the script. Because if I give you a little script And I say, hey, I want you to do everything here because this is what's the key to being a great podcaster or the key to being, you know, a great engineer. And you follow that and you just do what you're told. Well, yeah, you're in trouble because that means all I need to do is find someone that's willing to get up an hour earlier than you or stay up an hour later than you. And we can always find that person. And then I take the script from you and I give them the same thing. And now you're replaceable, right? So you got to have something that's off script. So being afraid of saturated markets really matters when you're just, when your approach to success is, I'm just going to do what I'm told. I'm going to follow the script and then I'll be all right. No, success is when you say, I don't care how saturated that market is because I'm not a part of it yet. And the market is not oversaturated with me. It's oversaturated with people that know about accounting. It's oversaturated with people that know about sales. It's oversaturated with people that know about marketing. It's oversaturated with people that know about Bitcoin, but it's not oversaturated with me. And so what am I going to bring to this oversaturated market so that I can talk about Bitcoin, so that I can teach English, so that I can teach history, so that I can study archaeology or whatever it is in a way that makes people say, whoa, that's really interesting the way they put it together. And this goes back to the earlier point on why it's so important for you to follow your interest right now, even if it has nothing to do with what you're going to do later on in life, because those are the things that are going to make you unique. There's a story I recently heard about a guy that spent most of his life being a musician, like in like a band. And when he got a little older, he was like, you know, I can't afford to keep doing this. I want to do something else. And he started to get interested in neurology. And what was fascinating is that because he had such an extensive background in neurology, he was able to talk about the brain. I'm sorry, because of his extensive background in music, he was able to talk about the brain in a way that referenced musical analogies and musical metaphors that other people understood. And he became a very interesting person to people, right? And so, yeah, there are lots of neurologists, but how many of the neurologists out there have been in a rock band and know as much about music as this guy, right? So now, doesn't matter how many neurologists there are, there's only one guy out there that can talk about neurology from that perspective. That's why it's so powerful to think about your interests and your passions multidimensionally, because when you can bring two to three things together, then you have something really unique to offer. It doesn't matter how many people are doing it.
Yeah. When I started this podcast, I wanted to start a hunting and fishing and outdoor podcast. And I thought everyone has there's too many, like there's way too many. How am I going to stand out? And I thought, you know, I'm not even a good enough hunter to be able to stand up to everybody else. And then I don't know who it was, but just that, you know, you got to be yourself. And you hear that your entire life, but at some point it clicks, and that individuality, that individual creativity. And so I call it the mediocre Alaskan because it was not a reflection of, you know, I'm pathetic, I'm useless, I'm whatever, but I'm going to tell the authentic story of someone who's in the process of learning through these things.
Right.
And I'm not going to pretend and put up a facade that I'm some sort of professional or I'm the big alpha hunter, because I think that ego gets in the way a lot of this stuff. And the hunting and fishing, it becomes all about antlers and becomes about, you know, big fish and whatnot. So I was like, hey, I'm going to just tell my story. It's going to be a different name. It's going to stand out because I'm not pretending to be something that I'm not. So
that's right.
But yeah, gosh, I can't remember who it was. It's probably a whole bunch of people, a mix of a bunch of good advice that I got. So I'm happy with it. But some people might think that, wait, what is this guy about? But yeah, that's a great point there.
Speaking of be yourself, there's a beautiful quote by St. Augustine that I just posted on Twitter a few days ago, and I'm going to read it here. It says, men go abroad to admire the heights of mountains, the mighty waves of the sea, the broad tide of rivers, the compass of the ocean, and the circuits of the stars, yet pass over the mystery of themselves without a thought. And one thing I'd say to people is don't just be yourself, but explore the boundless mystery of who you are. Being yourself takes time because you never know at any given moment in time the fullness of who you are. Who you are is something that you partially know, but it is also something that remains to be discovered through experience. How do you know if you like chocolate ice cream or not? Not by engaging in introspection, but by actually tasting chocolate ice cream and saying, yuck, or saying, wow, this is delicious. There are so many things in life that are like that. You know what feels good and what doesn't feel good. You know what you like and what you don't like. You know what resonates with you and what doesn't resonate with you by experimenting, by going out there and trying new things. And so if you're young, don't pressure yourself to be yourself too early in the sense of like defining your personality and saying, I'm going to stay inside of this little box of understanding for who I am. Because if I could show you a video from the future of how you're going to act 5 years from now, some of the things you're going to laugh about and joke about 5 years from now, some of the ways that you're going to help people 5 years from now, you wouldn't even recognize yourself, because who you are is constantly evolving as you acquire new experiences, meet new people, and have new successes and failures and so on. So be honest, be true to yourself, be authentic in relation to those aspects of who you are that you are already familiar with, but also seek out new experiences. And this is why, you know, like whether it's starting a podcast or being successful at something, I try to tell young people, don't pressure yourself to succeed too quickly. Before you try to figure out how to make a great podcast or how to differentiate yourself from the crowd, just try actually showing up and doing a podcast for a year without even worrying about the results. Like, it takes a while to get to know your own voice. You know, just by doing something for a year, you start to realize, you know, I sort of like to talk about these things. Or, you know, there's a pattern that I see in all my conversations that is good for me to know. I think I want to double down on that. You know, I didn't really enjoy that conversation as much. I now understand why. I'm going to do less of that and I'm going to go more in this direction. Sometimes you just need to do something for 6 months to a year to try it on for size, to see how you like it, to get some reps in. And then after that, you can start thinking about how do I differentiate myself? But the problem is most people never get started and they never give them the chance, themselves the chance to learn, because they're busy racking their brains trying to figure out how to be successful. Forget that. Figure out how to show up first.
Yeah.
Because you can't be successful if you don't show up. Figure out how to show up for 6 months to a year at anything. And then after that, you can build on the foundation. And so if you're young, you're in high school, I would encourage you to do things, even if you think, hey, that's not me. I mean, things like try out for choir. Try out for a play, even if you don't make the play. Well, that's not me. I'm not the acting type. I'm just the football type. It doesn't matter. Like, this is not a lifelong contract. No one's going to care. When you're 30, there's not a soul in the world that's going to care that you did a play in high school, unless you tell the story and make it interesting. Then they'll care, of course. But like, just try something, because the kinds of experiences that you will acquire from trying new things will lead to a lot of self-discovery, and it will give you more options in life for the kind of people you can relate to, the kind of places you can go, and the kinds of things you can achieve.
Yeah. I've found through doing the podcast and having those experiences and talking to people that I struggle. You know, I don't do everything correctly, but as a person, I'm far from mediocre, and it feels really good. And I have that discovery by, you know, these experiences and getting after it. And it's been fun to talk to so many people over this amount of time, and then a variety of people too, you know. Do you fish and hunt at all, or I don't, go outdoors?
Yeah. And that's, I shouldn't say I don't. I should say I haven't, right? I haven't.
Yeah. But it's, you know, finding value in all different types of people. I get bored with some of the hunting and outdoors podcasts because it's always the same thing. You're talking about mule deer, elk, or king salmon fishing every week for the whole year. And that's just not as interesting to me. And, you know, you're putting yourself in that smaller box, and that's all that you do, that's all that you are. And you know, we're a lot more diverse than that. I want to talk a little bit here about you put some great stuff on social media. You put a lot of quotes, and people share the quotes, people retweet the quotes, people put the quotes on the Instagram stories and whatnot. There's kind of a senior quote mentality in life. Like, a senior will Google a quote that they want to have for their senior quote. So it's not really a quote that embodies how they live or how they want to live. It's just something that sounds nice. So how do you start to become the type of person who's not just, oh, I like that quote, I share it, I forget it, I couldn't even recite it, I don't know who said it, versus someone who starts to be impacted by the things that they share and retweet and become those quotes become a reflection of how they live rather than just what they end up sharing.
It's interesting because if I were to sit down with almost any high school student, and as long as they didn't see me coming, right? Because when people see you coming and they know what you're doing, you got to switch it up. The element of surprise is important. But if I were sitting down with any high school student and I would ask them to tell me, hey, what's a song that you like? And they tell me, and I said, what do you like about that song? They tell me without struggle. And I say, how does it go? And they might not sing it, but they'd be able to quote a lyric that impacted them. If I were to say, what's a movie that you like? What's a TV show that you like? Yeah, tell me about it. What's it about? What do you like about that? You know, they get to talking about it. They'll quote a line or they'll quote a moment or paraphrase something that really impacted them, right? And the reason being is because they weren't watching these movies or listening to these songs with the aim of memorizing something. They were just taking something in that seemed interesting to them. And some of the things just stuck, right? All of us remember quotes and lyrics from songs and movies or moments in life where a friend said something to us that we never forgot. And the reason that we remember it is because it made an impact. It made an indelible mark on our souls. And so what I would say is try just engaging something because it's interesting to you. You know, like forget about the assignment for a second. Yeah. You got to come up with a quote. You have a deadline for that. Mark that deadline on your calendar. And if it really comes down to it, 30 seconds before the deadline, just go Google something and pick it. Okay. If it comes down to it and it's that desperate, you can always do that. This isn't the kind of assignment where you got to be afraid of being late. But with the time that you have left, say, you know, instead of completing the assignment, let me just think back. Is there anything that someone has ever said to me that made a difference in my life that I can't forget? And it doesn't matter if it's eloquent, because it's not eloquence that changes lives. It's the things that resonate in our hearts that remain with us forever that changes a life. You know, it was Mortimer Adler said that it's not about how many books you get through. It's about how many books get through to you. You can get through 1,000 books, but if not a single book gets through to you, it doesn't matter. You can get through 1,000 quotes, but if not a single quote gets through to you, it doesn't matter. What's a quote? What's a lyric? What's a statement someone has said that actually got through to you? One that's so near and dear to your heart that you don't even have to memorize because it was so powerful that you never forgot it. Pick something like that because that'll be a much more meaningful way of going about the assignment than just Googling something and doing it just to say that you did it. Do it for you. Mm-hmm. Do it for you. Another thing is I would encourage people to, like, let's say you have someone that you admire, an artist, an entrepreneur, a celebrity, whoever, as a personal homework assignment, give yourself a week to do this. You got time on your weekends. Find an interview on YouTube. Like, it could be anybody, right? Like you could, I could say Jay-Z, and I could go on YouTube and I can type Jay-Z interview. Everybody has done an interview, right? And I can find some podcasts where he's talking about his life and his philosophy and the stories behind the songs that he wrote and so on. Watch an interview. Spend like 30 minutes to 60 minutes watching one interview where someone that you admire or respect or look up to or think is cool is talking about their story or their work and the ideas behind it. And then for your quote, take a moment from that you actually liked, where they said something that was interesting to you. And don't worry about if it sounds like a quote, because a quote is simply when you take another person's words and you acknowledge that they said it and it had an impact on you. That's it. Mm-hmm.
That's great. Yeah, it's very applicable to, you know, 18 is not the only time in which people are transitioning or moving or feel that sort of, oh my gosh, here we go, we're starting from scratch again. I taught in California for 10 years, then I moved back home to take care of my mom. And so it was starting from square one again, you know, on an island in Southeast Alaska. So I was familiar with it, but I was only familiar with it as a kid. And now here I am as an adult, and here we go again. And so all that sort of stuff and redoing everything and finding a better version and going forward so you don't get stuck in that, yeah, you know, 18 through 65, I'm going to do this one thing and it's going to be a career, but it feels like just a job. And a lot of opportunities for people to be impacted by those sort of things. It's not just stuff that that we tell kids and then tell students. A lot of times we end up telling ourselves that, or reminding ourselves of the things that we're recommending to other people.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I want to dive maybe last in here into to some education options. College is unbelievably expensive. It's worth it. I just talked to the former valedictorian. Actually, the podcast episode that I had for this week was with the valedictorian from 2018. He's at Santa Clara University getting a degree in mechanical engineering, and he's going to graduate with no student debt. He's working on his master's right now. And so it is possible for, you know, kids from Southeast Alaska to go to mechanical engineering in Santa Clara, graduate with no debt. But that's not necessarily the path for everybody. College might not be the path for everybody. So sometimes there's an overemphasis on, hey, kids go to college. Ketchikan is very unique in that we have a shipyard. And you can get your certifications. I had a kid who was about to drop out of school because he could get his 40 hours a week and start his career. I said, that's a good point. I mean, that's a big conflict. You are 2 months away from graduation, and staying in school is limiting the amount of money that you can make and limiting the start of your career. And I said, you got to make the call. I will say that I don't think anybody has ever gone or thought back to and being upset that they did graduate. You know, so you make the call. So he did graduate, you know, he's still working. So we do have some unique opportunities in the, in forestry, in tourism, in, but some of those vocational type things, but it is an island and kids are kind of running out of options and they're not really sure if they don't want to go to college, what to do. So what else is out there?
Yeah. You know, the first thing I'll say is I am neither pro college nor anti college. I'm pro conscious living. I'm pro intentional living. I'm pro purpose. And I think the best foundation from which to make a decision about your education and your career is to, as Simon Sinek says, start with why. What's my why? Because your why is going to be different from other people's why, right? Start by saying, what do I want out of my experience? Why am I doing this? Now, to say something like, I'm going to do this because everyone else is doing it, that's not a good reason to do anything. That's not a good reason to go to college. That's not a good reason to drop out of college. To say I'm going to do something just because my parents want me to do it, well, that's not a good reason to do anything, going to college or not. Doesn't mean that your parents don't matter. It doesn't mean that you shouldn't listen to them or hear them out. It means that even if you do something because your parents do it, you better have another reason on top of that, because in about 5 years, 10 years max, your parents won't have the power to make you do anything. And if you don't love your life, your parents aren't going to be able to live your regrets for you. The best they can do is give you advice, but you've got to live your life. And so even your parents want you to think about your future in a way that goes beyond just doing it for them. So even if that you do what they want you to do, you got to have more that you bring to the table. You don't ever want to tell your professor, I'm here because my mom made me be here. You don't ever want to go to a job interview. I'm telling you right now, I'm just keeping it real. If you ever show up at a job interview in your life and someone says, why are you here? And you says, my mom says I should apply for this job. They're not going to hire you. You need to be able to speak for yourself. Even if the reason you came there is because your mom told you to go there, when you get there and they ask you why you're here, you need to have something above that you're going to tell them. Right. I love this company or, you know, I'm passionate about this. I have the ability to create value here and so on. So think about your why. What's your why? When you get there, college or somewhere else, what are you going to say you're there for? That's the first thing. The second thing I would say is making decisions about education is like, it's sort of like making decisions about health. You don't go to the doctor and say, you know, give me some medicine. You don't go to the pharmacy and say, hey, you know, give me something for a headache. You have to start with, what's your ailment? What's your problem? Like, what's your goal? Like, hey, what vitamin should I take? Well, I can't give you that information yet. You got to tell me a little bit about you. You know, are you having problems? Are you feeling good? Like, are you feeling bad? What's going on? What are you trying to do? If you go to a fitness trainer and you say, hey, what workouts should I do? I mean, I don't know. We got to talk about you first. What's the goal? You know, are you trying to run a marathon? Are you just trying to slim down so you can fit into a tuxedo at a wedding? Like, we got to talk about the goal before we can talk about the prescription, right? You go to a financial advisor. How much should I invest? What should I invest in? I don't know. What are we investing for? How old are you? What's your tolerance for risk? What's your income? And I think the problem with how we approach education is we give a lot of cookie cutter advice to people. We tell them you should do this, you should do that, because that's just the way we do things. That's what everybody else is doing. That's what I hear, you know, on the block about what it's going to take to succeed in the world. And that's not how it goes. You're going to get the most out of any path that you take by starting with why and by personalizing your experience, because you can't hide behind statistics. The world is going to show up for you in a way that's consistent with your own priorities, with your own principles, your own preferences, your own mindset, your own work ethic. And you got to be more in tune with those things than just with some formula that another person is giving to you, with all of those qualifications being said. Yes, there are ways to create a successful career outside of college. Because someone always reminds me of this whenever I talk this way, I'm going to go ahead and get it off the table. Yes, there are some professions where you are legally forbidden from practicing them without a college degree. Totally understood. The overwhelming majority of people who go to college aren't going to major in those professions. Just want to put that on the record too. Yes, you want to be a doctor, you want to be a lawyer, you want to be a CPA. There are things like that. But also, we want to put on the record, the majority of people who go to college don't major in those things, right? I've spent a lot of time working with dropouts, and or I prefer to call them college opt-outs, because dropout implies that they failed. Opt-outs are people who said, you know, college isn't the way for me, but I'm still serious about my career. I want to create wealth. I want to do amazing things. And I've worked with a lot of these opt-outs. And one of the things I found is that when you choose to opt out of college, the people in your life are going to challenge you on your why. There's no way in the world you're going to opt out of college without people in your life asking you questions like, so what are you going to do if you struggle to find a job? How are you going to, you know, signal your ability to create value even though you don't have a college degree? What if you change your mind? What about this? What about that? And so you kind of have to think critically if you don't go to college. But what I try to do is I try to encourage people who do go to college to do the same thing, right? Like, think about all these things, whether you go to college or not. But you absolutely can create a career outside of college. The education space is absolutely changing. There are a number of apprenticeship programs and coding boot camps now that offer people the opportunity to get professional skills training, to be a part of networking communities, to get mentorship, to get job opportunities, and so on, so that they can build their careers without a traditional credential. When we first set out to do this with Praxis about 6 years ago, that was a controversial statement. People were like, oh, are you sure? Now it's almost casually acknowledged, because the number of coding boot camps, the number of apprenticeship programs, the number of career accelerators has exploded since then. And it's no longer a game where you either go to college or you have to be, you know, a successful startup founder. It's no longer a game where you got to go to college or you have the pressure to be the next Elon Musk or the next Mark Zuckerberg. You can actually opt out of college and go get an education in a non-traditional way, in a way that's not built around the credential, but it's built around building real world experience, building a powerful network, actually getting a job opportunity, and developing your own ability to sell yourself, market yourself, and indicate to the people that are hiring that you know how to create value for them. And one of the coolest things that, you know, we've had the pleasure of observing over the past like 6 years as the education space has changed is that although the rhetoric is still, you got to have a degree to get a job, in every single instance, apart from fields where you're legally required to have a degree, whenever employers are sitting in front of someone who can show them how they can make their company more valuable, the degree becomes irrelevant. The degree is really just a filter to kind of provide a bare minimum that protects people that have to make hiring decisions from potentially wasting their time. But anytime you can show those people that you've created projects, that you have hustled, that you have acquired valuable skills, and that you have this quality of being able to create value, you know, they want that talent. And this is more than just a theory. This is something that I have seen over and over again with hundreds of people's lives. And you see more and more companies in response to this changing their degree requirements and saying, you know what? If you don't have a degree, show us this, show us a portfolio, and we'll consider you. And for a lot of people, that's the smart decision. I mean, you get to be debt free. You get to, instead of investing, you know, 4 or 5, we should really say 5 to 6 years, because that's more the average, rather than people graduating in 4 years. That's more the ideal. That isn't really a lived reality for most people. But instead of spending 5 to 6 years of your prime getting a college degree, it's possible to spend 6 to 12 months getting a foundation that will allow you to build a competitive career that in many ways exceeds that of your counterparts. So there are options out there. This isn't me badgering anybody saying that I'm going to think lowly of you if you go to college, or I'm going to harass you if you go to college. If that's what you want, that's what you're passionate about, and you've thought about your why, and you have a way to make that work for you, more power to you. TK Coleman won't be the guy coming to tackle you down saying, no, 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 don't go to college. But if you're someone that's even slightly thinking about an alternative, and you're thinking to yourself, I don't know if I want to rack up the debt. I don't know if I want to be spending the next 4, 5, 6 years of my life in college. I'm curious to know if there are ways to be able to have a good career and a good education and a good network without doing it. The answer to that is a resounding yes. The options are out there, 100%. And there are lots of young people out there that are proving it with their lives.
That's great.
This isn't a philosophy now. This is an empirical reality. It's the world that we're living in. Yeah. We have more tools and technologies and options than we ever had. You know, when I was younger, I used the fax machine. I wouldn't use a fax machine today.
No, I have a buddy who in the bottom of his email still has the fax for, I'm like, dude, you got to change that, unless it's a joke. If it's a joke, it's a pretty funny. It's a pretty good.
Right.
Well, I really appreciate your time, man. I got to clean up some stuff and then head off to school. But where can people find you? All that good stuff.
Yeah, man, you can just one-stop shop. Find me at tkcoleman.com. All my social media stuff is there. You can find me on Instagram from there, Twitter from there. But just remember one thing, TK Coleman, add a .com to it. You found me.
Perfect. Thanks a lot, man. I really appreciate it. Great stuff. Appreciate your time.
Hey, man. Thanks, Jeff. It's fun talking with you.